Hi there, folks. Welcome to another episode of the A Minute to Midnight show. This is Tony, and I'm coming to you from New Zealand. With me, I have Eric Stogner, who is in Atlanta, Georgia. And Eric's been on a few times in the last few months, and it's great to have you back, Eric, first time for 2026.
Yeah, likewise. Good to be here, and good to catch up on weather as we did earlier. We got a little dusting of snow here in Georgia, which is extremely rare where I live. So it wasn't a white Christmas, but it was a white January.
And that's it. I said to you off air that was interesting because here in the part of New Zealand where I live, like about a week ago, we were having very hot temperatures for New Zealand. I mean, we don't have a particularly hot climate, but for here it was, you know, in the mid-90s. And then all of a sudden that's changed. In the last few days it's gotten cold and it's midsummer here. But yesterday here where I live, we had a high of around about 14 degrees Celsius, which is 56 degrees, and that's the middle of summer, and it never got any hotter than that all day. So it's pretty unusual.
And it's strange to wonder, like, is this normal or is this some kind of modification weather? We just end up having to question almost everything, and it's a weird place to live where you just question the weather, for Pete's sake.
Well, yes, that's right. It is hard to know sometimes, or what's maybe incoming out in space and all those things as well, which could be affecting the weather. There's a lot of possibilities. Obviously, they do use weather control mechanisms, which could be at play. It's hard to know, like you say. The other thing, I suppose, getting off the weather, which I find really interesting at the moment, and we might as well start with this, is what's happening on the global political spectrum as we seem to have fighting for ascendancy in the world. We've got, for example, on New Year's speech, Xi Jinping, you know, the president of China, basically announced that they're going to be pushing for the reunification of Taiwan with China, and it's unstoppable, says Xi Jinping, for the, you know, resurrecting of the Sino Empire. And we know that Taiwan is strategically very important for things like semiconductors and other electronics and all of that, which is needed for every big push that's happening for technology with all of this AI and data centers and robots and all of that. So controlling Taiwan is a big thing. It's not just some little island. It's very important strategically for that.
Well, historically, they've been the manufacturing center for these things. So if you take Taiwan, you've stolen the world's semiconductor circuits, or at least a big chunk of them.
Absolutely. So then that brings me to Donald Trump and his push for Greenland. That's really big in the news at the moment. And he's just sent a letter to the Prime Minister, I think, of Norway, basically saying, you rejected me for a Nobel Peace Prize, therefore peace is now no longer my number one thing that I'm focusing on, and US interest is the most important thing, and so on. And Trump's saying they want Greenland, they're going to get Greenland, no matter what, almost. They're going to, you know, the US is going to get Greenland, just like Venezuela. They haven't even finished sorting that out yet. But there's, you know, Trump is known for lots of bluster, and obviously he's very sort of bullish character in many ways. But you've got to ask, what's the story with Greenland? I mean, the US has never had a claim on Greenland, not really. I mean, Denmark's had ownership of Greenland since before the USA even existed. So, you know, it's been, whether they deserve to have control or not is another story, but they've had it even before the US existed. So what I want to look at here just quickly is, why does the US really want Greenland? I think the talk of needing it for strategic military application, so it's out of the hands of China and Russia, I think that's not really the main issue at stake here. Just like drugs wasn't the main thing in Venezuela, it was resources, I believe, in Venezuela. And I think it is exactly the same with Greenland, because what people may not realize is Greenland's sitting on hundreds of billions of dollars worth of rare earth minerals that are needed for AI and data centers and cell phones and all of this stuff. If the US were to control Greenland, they control a massive amount of the resources needed for all of this technocratic technology, which I'll get to the technocratic bit in a second. So sorry if I'm a bit long-winded here, Eric, but I'm trying to make a point that they whoever controls Greenland then would control a massive amount of those resources. Currently, China controls about 70%, I think, of the what's needed for all of this technology. But if the US, for example, was to control the control Greenland, that there is a vast resource of natural minerals underneath the ice that is needed. Plus, we know that the data centers are getting muted for being huge, and massive amounts of power are needed. And so there's lots of cold water and lots of space and all that for cooling and things like that there in Greenland. So what that is very interesting to me is back in the 1930s and 40s, there was a guy called Joshua Haldeman, who was actually Elon Musk's grandfather. I'll make sure I got his name right there, Joshua Haldeman. And he led an organization called Technocracy Incorporated in the 30s and 40s. And what they wanted was for a technocratic sort of fascist elite who were tech experts to control a region which they called the Technate of America. And I don't know whether it was Haldeman himself who drew up a map, but he was part of the organization that drew up a map. This is Elon Musk's grandfather, drew up a map for the Technate of America, and that included the US and Canada and Venezuela and the Caribbean and Mexico and Central America and Greenland into one Technate of America under what he wanted, you know, a technocratic elite, which were all the tech experts, to control the world instead of democracy, or control that part of the world instead of it being democracy. And what's really interesting is now we have Elon Musk, supposedly the richest man in the world with all this power and wanting to make, you know, put chips in your brain and make robots, and has Starlink and all this technical stuff. And then we have Trump pushing for Venezuela and Greenland and all these things, which are in Elon Musk's grandfather's map. And then we have Elon Musk, you know, high up there with Trump, basically in America earlier, you know, with that group that which the name escapes me at the moment, that Musk headed and there for a while under Trump's admin, but, you know, to get rid of waste spending and all that. But Musk is pushing big time for all of this technical stuff to control the world, and then we have this interesting timing that Trump is demanding Greenland and getting Venezuela and all of that. Is this a coincidence, or is Elon Musk somehow in the background of all of this and the other technocratic elite calling the shots here? And I'll leave it, you know, I feel like I've spoken a lot without letting you in, so I'll throw it to you for comment.
But one thing we do know, it's not a coincidence. Whatever it is, it's not a coincidence. It's being played out. And yeah, this big land grab, it feels like, that the especially the United States seems to be involved in, but then other countries as well, like China and even Russia, I've heard it said, like, okay, it's going to be a giant land swap. The U.S. gets Greenland and or Venezuela, and China can have Taiwan, and Russia can now lay claim to Ukraine, and we can just all move on. The big three can continue to get bigger. But yeah, it does kind of raise the question, what's really going on? And it almost seems like, you know, they don't even need plausible deniability or plausible believability anymore just to make their big moves. Like, what's the imperative for Greenland. There really isn't. It's pretty much a naked resource grab. Even Venezuela, like, is that really in our hemisphere? And we're, you know, are China and Russia really putting troops there? That's one narrative you occasionally hear spun. Although, you know, the original one was, you know, we're finally dealing with drugs and we'll blow up a few fishing boats kind of thing. We knew it wasn't that. It, you know, but any of these things, it's almost like they're to the point where we don't even need a story that has to be important. You're just going to do what we say and we're going to do what we're going to do. So I go back to dividing the world into 10 governable regions, yeah, which has long been around, like you say, you know, the fathers and even grandfathers and some of the current elites were involved in these things. The UN has published maps like this where, you know, sustainable governance, and even the Georgia Guidestones, you know, that were blown up not far from me not too long ago, they hinted at, you know, smaller government, fewer governments, appeal to a one world government. So all these things have been leading towards, you know, a global governance where you've got governance that really spans whole regions. And so, yeah, I've recently seen some maps where I just assume the Americas would stop at, say, Panama, Panama Canal, you know, middle of Central America kind of thing, and then go all the way up through Canada and Alaska. But yeah, now maybe I've seen some newer maps where maybe it is Venezuela and let's grab Colombia along the way. And so maybe it doesn't exactly follow continents, but yeah, I think you're right. It's got to be some sort of resource grab. We've got oil in Venezuela. We've got, you know, rare earth metals in Greenland. So, and I hadn't even thought about what you said, that maybe it's a great place to generate power and you got a lot of cooling capabilities up in Greenland. So, yeah, we certainly know data centers are going up. I drive by them in my last former hometown and, you know, the power grid that gets built to those things. So there's actually a plant, well, an exit on a highway, and electrical infrastructure is being put in near me. They say it's for a Rivlin plant, but really, do we need more automotive plants, even electrical ones? It wouldn't shock me if it turned into a data center. But anyhow, yeah, I think it's all of that. And I think it's pretty obvious why they want data centers. I don't know what keeps you up at night more, but I get almost spooked by some of these videos I see about the advance of robotics.
Yeah.
And we've seen the robot dogs, we've seen the robot humanoids, and wow, if this is what they're showing us, what else are they not showing us? These robots are now tremendous. They'll overpower people in a heartbeat. Even the robot dogs, I don't know if you remember those, like they were introduced, yeah, during COVID as maybe a crowd surveillance or crowd control device. And the back of the dog has always been a flat rail, perfect for mounting, you know, guns or, right, other weapons. Now the face of the dog is some sort of a LIDAR radar system that helps it really be agile and be able to see 360 degrees. And I've seen a robot dog with wheels on its feet. So if you can imagine, it combines all the power of like a four-legged animal that can climb stairs and navigate rocks. But then when it gets on a straightaway, it can roll faster than even the animal could have run. So, oh my gosh, it's pretty bizarre to watch that and then what the robots do. But yeah, all those robots are going to need what? Resources, electronic chips, and energy, and all the materials that go in them. Because of course they're trying to make them out of these, ultralight, ultra strong materials. I'm sure they're like carbon fibers and, you know, whatever else. So I'm sure even aluminum, there's probably, stronger things than aluminum make these things sort of bulletproof and indestructible.
Well, the other thing that's needed for all of these things, electronic devices, smartphones, solar panels, computers, everything that's electronic, electric cars, is massive amounts of silver. And mm-hmm. silver has become a real shortage. And so yep. I can see that playing out big time, control over resources like silver in the yep. future. And with it, the price of silver, I believe, and gold, all the precious metals, but will expand upwardly big time. I think we're at the beginning of a rally where precious metals will really rise to levels that most people just won't have a hope of getting a hold of, even silver. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's advancing very rapidly now it's basically tripled in value in a year, going up. Even this morning, I look, because it's still morning here in New Zealand, and the silver price has gone up quite a lot this morning compared to what it was, and I think it's going to go a lot more than that. But all of the silver is needed for military applications and electronics and all that. I mean, every time the US builds a fighter jet or makes a battleship or whatever, the massive amounts of silver that needs to go into that as well. And so watch what's happening with the precious metals markets, and particularly silver. Yeah.
And then the AI that's going to need that too, all the computing power to run all these things, these advanced weapon systems and drones and robots. They have to still have a hive mind. They have to be communicating and working in sync. I just saw an interesting thing this morning. You know, anytime we get the official news about how things went down in Venezuela, all I hear is, you know, oh, the military did a flawless job executing this maneuver, you know, and basically extracted the leader with very little bloodshed. But now there is coming out that, you know, there were some advanced weapons used that utterly overwhelmed whatever soldiers there might have been. And I don't even know the nature of them, other than they could have been energy or mental kind of weapons rendering, you know, a soldier with a machine gun not very effective. So, I mean, imagine if that's what's going on, and then they can be placed on again, dogs or drones or robots, to where, uses a lot of energy, but it's ultra precise and effective. So, yeah, there's a brave new world going on out there that, you know, sounds, oh, great, our military can do things. Well, when's the military going to be turned on us? Which, of course, you know, we've been talking about in Washington, D.C., bringing in military to do what should have been law enforcement, and, you know, the breakdown in governments, whether it's what's going on in the U.K. with their governments and their riots with, clashes they're having. And then, you know, we're being set up for similar things, too, in states like Minnesota, where suddenly the immigrant crisis and the, you know, radicals, and, you know, throw into that dumpster fire, how about some gasoline that could ignite concerning Iran? Now suddenly we have all this going on in Iran. We think we're going to be invading or doing something in Iran any day, and so are there sleeper cells that could erupt? And so all of these things seem like plausible reasons that, wow, we could really use surveillance state with a lot of cameras and reactive military style equipment to be used domestically to protect the home front. So, I mean, it seems like it's all working hand in glove, whether it's Homeland Security or immigration or police action or calling out the National Guard or invading governments and taking out leaders in foreign countries. Like, wow, these things are all synchronized somehow under our new Department of War, right? Instead of defense, it's war. So, well, the question is war on whom?
Yeah, well, that's really a good point. And when you have these anti-ICE protests and all that going on, and, you know, people that are mainly on the left that are coming against ICE, you know, the immigration enforcement, but then you've got these ICE officers dressed with masks and basically body armor and looking like thugs, really. And you got to be going, is this really about just getting rid of some illegal immigrants, or is there a much bigger picture going on here? And it's igniting in some of those states like Minneapolis and Minnesota and that. You have these people pushing back, and you know, what could turn into riots, and then you have the paramilitary, basically ICE, you know, fighting back, and you have it's a recipe for this Hegelian dialectic divide and conquer. You know, neither
absolutely,
don't people should just not fall for either side and realize there's a big plan going on here. Don't be pro ICE, don't be anti ICE, don't be pro the demonstrators, or pro that we've got to get rid of the illegal immigrants, we back ICE. Like, you've got to realize you're getting you in two camps to create a civil unrest.
It's hard not to look at these things, at least hard for those of us that are awake, and not see them for what they probably are, which is These are made for TV moments. They're staged for cameras. They're wanting cameras to be there. And if they aren't there, they'll make sure they place someone with some cameras. So you're just deliberately throwing incendiary parties together just to have, we used to have a terrible TV show a number of years ago called Jerry Springer. And it was right when they were making the evolution from these talk shows where it'd be like daytime talk shows, kind of therapy or whatever, morning magazine shows, to on the Jerry Springer show, you could guarantee someone's going to be in a fight and they're going to pick up a folding chair and give them the chair. You're just waiting for the chair to break out. It's like going to a hockey game. You're just waiting for a fight to break out. Otherwise, you feel like you didn't get your money's worth. So when we watch the news, I think we've been conditioned where we're waiting for some conflict and then the commentary to follow after it. And that's what I sometimes marvel at, is we just keep the news on to keep track of, you know, what evil is projecting today. And it is just so opinion. And I've noticed they not only tell you the quote unquote news, but then they tell you how you're supposed to feel about it. So you've got news channels, of course, that have always, you know, have for a while leaned left or leaned right. There used to be a day in this country where there was a man named Walter Cronkite, and he would get on one of the three networks back when there were only three networks. And he just was a guy in a suit reading the news, very deadpan. And you just learn to trust him, right? And isn't that the story of society? They have built up people we would trust, whether it's a man in a suit on a TV station or whether it's people in white coats with stethoscopes. So you learn to trust these people so that later when you flip their script, now you fall for it. So if the news media is telling us something, there's still this vague memory that we used to trust these folks. You know, and if the medical establishment tells us something, we have this script in our head that they're trustworthy, highly educated people. So I remember, was it 2023 that Davos announced the basic purpose of their group, the theme for the year was restoring trust. Yeah. That's like, no kidding. You spend a world and years building up something so you can overturn it, and you do end up destroying the trust. So, you know, we've just had successive amounts of, we don't know what to trust, whether it's the weather or the international news we're being told, or yes, it's about drugs. If it was about drugs, you could have sniffed that out years ago. It's not about the drugs in Venezuela.
No, that's right. And you know, I'm thinking about the made for TV moments that you were saying. I mean, like 5 years or pre-COVID, for example, could you have imagined there would be a branch of law enforcement in America that would be going around gassing people in cars to get them out of cars, or yanking people out of churches or out of buildings? And this branch of law enforcement has masks on, and you know, so you can't identify them. Could you have imagined that being American life a few years ago?
Not only is it unimaginable, it's come to the point where the very people that would have called themselves constitutionalists, law and order types, people that understood the limits and the checks and balances that were supposedly enshrined in the Constitution and Bill of Rights and our law system, they're the ones now that have somehow been flipped to embrace this kind of thing. Oh, well, if you're violating those rules to stamp out things that you have driven us crazy with, like, you know, agendas that that are often on the liberal side, if it's against the liberals, then the conservatives are okay with it. And they don't realize you don't realize that this is hurting us all. And it's going to come back to bite everybody. It's just whoever is in the crosshairs of the law enforcement system. This is not the free country we were supposed to be.
Well, that's right, exactly. Right now it's targeting illegal immigrants, supposedly. But who's to say next that they won't be used against dissidents of some other sort, what they consider to be dissidents? And yep. And then the lefty goons are playing into this, probably being funded from outside by, you know, NGOs and so on, putting money into that to fuel it from the rioting side of things as well. And you have, you know, the Democrats, you know, speaking up vehemently, loudly. Anything that Donald Trump does has to be the opposite. And you know, you've got to fight back against ICE and all of this type of thing. So you've got this Hegelian dialectic playing out big time. And for people that don't know, just quickly reiterating, what is Hegelian dialectic? It's problem, reaction, solution, or thesis, antithesis, and then a synthesis. So you have control of both sides, you know, those with the thesis, and then you control those with the antithesis. So you might have the left and the right, and then you get them, you know, fighting or whatever, so that you can bring them to the middle ground where you're trying to establish your synthesis. And that's what's happening as I'm moving everyone into this, well, beast system, technocratic beast system.
In fact, recently, if anyone's familiar with sailing on a small sailboat and how that actually works, I suddenly saw a good illustration that parallels what you're saying. It's the idea of how a sailboat can sail against the wind and still go to where it wants to go. The way you do that is you tack left and then you tack right, left and right. So you kind of seesaw your way along, even though you're kind of going against the prevailing winds or even the prevailing water, you can be done and you end up, the captain can still navigate the ship where he wants it to go despite the winds. But if you're the one on the ship, you're going to feel like, oh, wait a minute, we're leaning to the left. Then we're leaning to the right. We're leaning to the left. If you know, if you don't have a compass and see where you're going, that's just because you're on the ship and you don't have that perspective. But yeah, to me, that Hegelian dialectic, left, right, push, pull, that's how it works. And you're accomplishing something. You're going somewhere. It's just you have to control the sails or the wind or both, you know, left and right. And that's how you steer the ship without, frankly, the passengers knowing it. It's like only the captain knows where this is going, really, unless you're astute and looking at, you know, some kind of land markers some kind of GPS. Yeah, that's what this is. And it's how we've been conditioned, not for years, for decades. And it's almost like been built up for such a time as this. We're seeing it in such rapid succession now. We don't realize that we've gotten here over decades. So we've been trained in this left-right model. It didn't used to be that way. What you were talking about earlier, too, made me think about, you know, people cheer something today that they wouldn't have cheered yesterday. There's that famous quote by Martin Niemöller, I believe his name is, who was, in World War II era in Nazi Germany. And he had a famous quote. He says, "First, they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I'm not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews. I'm not a Jew." And then he says, "Now they're coming for me, and no one's left to speak up for me." So, yeah, we remain silent and see these things happening, and few even notice it, let alone speak up. And, of course, frankly, I hate to say it, but if we speak up, so what? Like, what are we really going to do? You know, and that's what I meant earlier by, you know, this plausible believability and deniability. I don't even think they need to try that hard any longer. Who can stand up and fight this stuff? I mean, what are we really going to do? Throw an actual protest? I think we just have to recognize what's going on and be prepared personally and then spiritually. It's a crazy time. You know, we often talk about big issues that we see in the news, right? We almost can't miss them. They're in our face. But I often we talked a couple weeks ago, like, you know, if I'm going to be back on, what would I be talking about? And I had to pray about it. Like, what would that be? I like noticing little things that people don't often seem to notice, but if you think about it, are important. And for me today, it would be the inversion of all things. And what I mean by that is so many things that we either were once taught or we were grown up to believe, or we thought the way the world worked, it's like they've been inverted purposely. And I think a perfect example, I sent you a screenshot, you can clip it in later maybe, of the food pyramid. Something as basic as the food pyramid, at least in the United States, I don't know if it's global, we always had this food pyramid from the 50s, I'm sure it came out. And it showed, you know, at the bottom, you eat a lot of these things, and then some more, you know, the next layer up, you eat some of these things, and you always get to the top, and the top was things like, I guess, candy and sugars and stuff. So you weren't supposed to eat a lot of those, but they were still part of a balanced diet. And now the Department of Agriculture, whatever, released a new one, and it's completely inverted. And I couldn't help but think, like, okay, you just flipped generations of thinking on its head. Which one's right? Like, I don't know. There's some truth in the old one. There's some truth in the new one. But do we even trust the experts? And then from an esoteric and symbology level, I couldn't help but notice, okay, come on. Two pyramids, as above, so below. Like, we're literally flipping the pyramids on top of each other. You know, I just, that's one that I just always carry around looking for pyramid symbolism on our dollar bill and, you know, all the powers that be behind that. Even I love to point out the World Trade Centers. You know, we took two pillars that were square and equal. And then when they knocked those down and built a new one, if you look carefully at the design, it's two inverted pyramids, one on top of the other, crushed on each other. So it doesn't look like, it's like some strange shaped obelisk. But if you look at it, it's actually two pyramids crushed together. It's brilliant symbology, right? So yeah. All that to say, the little things I notice and I see its effect on people is the inversion of all things. And you just talk to people today and they seem so unsettled. They seem so skeptical of everything. They don't know what to believe. They don't know what to trust. You know, and there's obvious reasons for this, right? We have, no longer is it Photoshop. Now it's, you know, AI driven deep fakes. I mean, so, you know, are we even real right today? You know, people may wonder one day, was this a real video or a fake one? So yeah, it's no surprise that it's hard to know what's real and what's not, what's being fabricated and what's organic. We don't know, but I'm just focusing on the effect on people. Like, how do we carry ourselves in this life? Do we feel confident? I mean, I notice conversations with my own family, you know, when we think about the future and planning and investment, should we invest in gold and silver? Because silver is going to be going up. Well, is it too late? Is it already gone? All the old things that used to make sense. I can remember seeing the nightly news report used to include like business news. The stock exchange is up and they would give some analysis as to why. You know, and I went to school and I got an MBA for Pete's sake. And I've taken a couple courses in finance. And so I understand some of that lingo. And I look now at the world we live in and nothing makes sense based on what we used to be taught and told. The stock market, the real estate market, the inflation. I mean, things are crazy expensive in this country and I think in the world. Yeah. And so, you know, what is going on? That's what I mean by the inversion. Whatever we used to think is like, this is the way of the world. It's smart to get a college degree and get a job and rise the corporate ladder and save for your retirement and all that stuff. I don't know that that's true anymore. It's hard to know what's true. So I guess my point is the net effect is I see people being rather unstable, ungrounded. They don't really seem to have, you know, just this strong sense of values and certainty. And I think, well, that's probably an agenda, right? Keep the people unstable and anxious, just like the news is designed to stir us up and keep us anxious with all these noises and red swooshes and alerts and everything. And, you know, I think it just keeps the population very malleable. We're all fearful and we don't know where things are going. And so I'll just kind of maybe land the plane on this topic. A guy I like to follow a lot, John Eldridge, has a lot of podcasts and books, and he made a point. He says, we have become weary, skeptical pragmatists. And he defined that. He says, just the age we live in with the instant answers on through the internet, we can look up everything. And yet, when you look up something, you know, last year they may have said that, you know, doing lots of crunches and exercises is good for you. To strengthen your core. And then today you might read, oh, that's the worst thing you could do for your core. You should do other things. So like everything we once counted on, the food pyramid, what we eat, how we exercise, how we live, how we save, everything is so turbulent and left-right paradigm being shaken up. It just has made everyone, we're weary and we are skeptical of everything. We don't know what to believe. And we just want something pragmatic. Like, give me an answer. You know, at the end of this podcast, like, how am I supposed to live? And serves to pull people away from the Lord, I think. It serves to, people won't wait on the Lord. They don't know how to pray. They don't know how to wait on an answer because the Lord doesn't answer your prayers as quickly as Google does, you know? So I think that has this detrimental effect on us all, that all this chaos, it's wearing us down and it's making us skeptical of everything, which ultimately makes us skeptical of the Lord. Where is he? Is he really good? Is he coming back? Is that biblical narrative, you know, even true anymore? What can you count on? And for those of us that do cling to the Lord, we see the biblical narrative being confirmed over and over, but it takes some knowledge and, you know, being familiar with the scriptures to see that. So that would be my hope for people is, you know, in this topsy-turvy time, your faith is the one rock that doesn't get shaken, even when the rest of the world is being inverted all around us all the time. That's the only thing we can really put our faith in, and just be wise and alert and gentle as doves, but wise as a serpent or a snake. Like, we need to know what's going on, but we need to still rest. So that was kind of a long way of going through this concept of inversion. Everything seems like it's flipped on its head.
It absolutely has. And, you know, I think about YouTube, and a few years ago, most videos on there were pretty much organic, you know. But now it's like, I don't know what the percentage is, but a huge high percentage is AI. And mm-hmm. You got to ask yourself the question, if it's being generated by AI, who's behind it and what's the agenda? Because if all your videos at the top of the feeds in YouTube are, not all of them, because there's still a few good organic channels, but the majority of them are AI. And and so you've got to ask, what are they trying to condition you for if they're having AI videos at the top of all your algorithms and things like that? And being topsy-turvy, I mean, I just look at, you know, for years I've said, oh, people should be looking at silver and gold and that as a potential safe haven. And I've never wavered from that, really. But you've had the Western media say, oh, God, they're just old relics, you know, pet rocks, and forget them. You know, we're moving into this new, you know, sort of era where we don't need all that. But quietly behind the scenes, the central banks and the big players like JP Morgan has been accumulating precious metals whilst they're manipulating the markets constantly and telling you don't need it. They've been swooping it all up into their vaults. And now more than ever, central banks and governments are sweeping up all the precious metals. And you've got to ask why, because we're heading into a digital, you know, economy, and the current world system will collapse, and they're going to bring us into a new one. Well, why do they need precious metals? And it's like, okay, they're going to back the system with something. You also need these metals for all this AI and all that other stuff that I was saying before. And so they've been lying to you all the way along, saying you don't need it. This is a relic of the past. We don't need precious metals anymore. Meanwhile, right, their real agenda has been to accumulate it, because they do. They know it's the future. They're going to need all this. And so, again, we've just been lied to left, right, and centre, and people have been so gullible to listen to all the financial advisors and the ones that the mainstream media pushes forward and all that. And you've got to, again, ask, why were they pushing them forward, telling you this is what the future is, when really it's something completely different? And as you mentioned really earlier, absolutely, Our only safe place is in God, really, and the Word, and otherwise we're going to be, you know, tossed and turned by every new thing that goes along and every change of doctrine and so on. So, yeah, our faith has to be there.
Who is programming the AI? First off, we know it learns from people, so they're sort of being programmed by the world, and yet we also know that I'm sure those who control the AI, and there are some, they have their agendas. So to me, the most sophisticated deception in the world will be one that is either conceived or propagated or played out by AI. And it is bizarre to see all the ways they're conditioning people to just relax around AI. You know, there'll be companionship bots and that kind of thing, where you can talk to a humanoid. And, you know, frankly, humans have become so unskilled at interpersonal relationships, and they discard people and they cancel people, and they don't know how to talk anymore in a room. You know, they're all looking at their devices and they won't make eye contact. I mean, all these things, it is becoming more imaginable that people would find interacting with a machine preferable to a person, especially an AI machine that just gets better and better and says all the answers that it knows you want to hear. So that'll be a super effective way to deceive people on secular things and spiritual things. And I think we mentioned in the past, like Yuval Harari, he's already said, like, you know, the Bible needs to be rewritten anyhow, and he's big into the technocratic improvements of AI, etc. So he's just already being a cheerleader for the idea that, you know, scripture and belief systems can all be rewritten and improved upon. We can all reimagine them and, you know, end some of the wars and hatred between religious groups, which, you know, as they stoke the wars and the hatred between religious groups, that may sound appealing, but, you know, look at where we're humanity's being led off a cliff by all this technology. Yeah. And, crazy. Yeah. I think the Lord is allowing so that we'll wake up and realize this, we got to stop the madness. The only way to stop the madness is trust the Lord.
Yeah. Because even with people's jobs, you know, with AI and robots, there needs to be less and less people in the workforce. And so, you know, oh, well, then there's more time for leisure. You know, that's what they're telling you. So then you won't have to work because AI and robots will do this all for you, and you can do leisure stuff. But then you've got AI making music now. So, oh, what's your leisure? Oh, I'm a musician. Well, oh, wait a minute. I don't need to be a musician anymore because AI can make all the music for me. So what's the point in learning to play an instrument? Because I can just do it with AI. So
it's making all of life pointless. And not only is it pointless, you know, A, the music that it makes is not all that good. And it kills the human spirit. Why should I, like you say, learn music and play it? Why should I write films and try and film them? AI is going to film them all. And yeah, it's just dumbing us down. You want a population of people that have loads of leisure time? Go into an old folks home. These people are sad to me because they got nothing to do. There's nothing they need to do. No one's expecting anything of them. They're not earning a living. They're not improving with a craft. Yeah, it's going to make life pretty meaningless and joyless if we're all just sitting around and AI is doing it all for us. We'll long for the days when we had to do it ourselves.
Exactly. So, okay, I guess we'll look to wrap up. So what are your closing thoughts? What do you want to get across to people as your main talking point that they take away from this, Eric?
Yeah, I guess as always, it's like do something real with someone real. We need to meter and caution how much time we spend in front of all media and just realize what's being programmed here, as opposed to what's going on in the world, because in the end of the day, it's your life and you've got to live it. And you're going to face the creator too. So you want to be right with God and with your loved ones more than you want to even be right in the world of news and media. And we'll just, you know, see what opportunities are around the corner. And a lot of ways, I think the Lord is allowing things to get crazy right towards the end, because it will loosen people's grip on the world. And not everybody, but what's that line? Whosoever will come to him. I think that's God's like merciful end game in all of this, that whosoever will wake up and realize this world is not where I want to be. It's all in my hope is in whatever the Lord can teach us and guide us during this world and what comes in the next life with him. So that's kind of always the end point I like to point people to.
Absolutely. So, yeah, if you don't know Jesus as your Lord and Savior, now's the time to be serious about looking into that and what does it entail. Well, Eric, it's been a fascinating discussion. I've been very happy with the way this has gone. I think people need to hear it, and we need to all get grounded in the truth. And I think the messages that you've shared and what I've tried to get across, I think, have been in that direction. So thank you so much for a great discussion again today, Eric.
As always, enjoyed it. Thanks so much, Tony.
Cheers.
Take care.
Cheers. And please, folks, remember to like and share this video. It would be much appreciated. And subscribe to us at aminutetomidnight.com, our various channels and our website. And also, just a reminder that we do run A Minute to Midnight 100% by donations. There's a big thank you to all the people that do donate to us. We couldn't really do it without your help. If anyone else does want to donate, that would be appreciated too. And you can do that at aminutetomidnight.com. And the music used in the shows, I've written, played, and recorded. It's not AI, it's me. So God bless, and God willing, we'll be back with another episode in a few days' time.